Looking ahead to Thursday, October 1st. Bayside is at the Fillmore New York at Irving Plaza. Oogie Wawa is at Mulcahy's of Center Each. Foreigner at the Capital One Theater at Westbury. Sullivan Hall welcomes Lost Bayou Ramblers. The New York Funk Exchange at 9 p.m. at Rose's Live Music. And in Manhattan at the Julia de Burgos Cultural Center, doors at 8 p.m., it's the Freedom CD Release Party with Yomo Toro, Roy Brown, Zon del Barrio, Siete Nueve, and the Welfare Poets. If you're a local venue, band, or promoter and want to get your gigs on the concert billboard, send an email to Scene, that's S-C-E-N-E, at WUSB.FM. And log on to our online concert billboard at our website at WUSB.FM. Click Concert Billboard for late-breaking, late-posted gigs. And as always, thanks for listening to the Concert Billboard right here on WUSB Stonebrook.
And a prize to anybody who can figure out where that was recorded. Thanks, DJF, for the Concert Bill. Foreigner? Really? Wow. Oh, boy. Things don't change, do they? It's 1 minute after 6 o'clock, and you're listening to WUSB Stonybrook. It's time for, guess what? Off the Wall. Thank you. Oh, good. Welcome. It's Off the Wall, back again after a hiatus of a week. Hear that? Hear that noise? Shouldn't hear that noise. That's simply the volume being adjusted. You know what that means? It means it's dirty inside this place. It's all kinds of dirt inside the board. And, wow, things sure do get dirty. We need a good cleaning. Yeah, we sure do. And hopefully that'll happen soon. No stream tonight. Apparently that's dirty too, and that's not working. So if you're listening to me, it's either because you're listening to the radio signal, which is somehow getting to you, or because you're listening to me in the future sometime, in which case, how you doing? It's good to know that we made it. Yeah, you know, they should rename this show Everything Always Happens on a Tuesday, because I swear it's so frustrating sometimes trying to get things done. This is the day I like to prepare for the radio program and get things in order, but of course everything has to happen to prevent me from doing that. There are literally committees of people meeting on Monday evenings to figure out ways to keep me from doing the things I need to do on Tuesday. And boy, that sure happened last week. That's why I wasn't here last week, because things really hit the fan. I mean, it wasn't anything human-caused. It was actually feline-caused. My cat had a very bad day last week. Probably the worst day of his life, maybe not counting birth, if that's unpleasant for a cat. The day started, and this is the thing that I really regret more than anything, because it's never happened before, but basically I was leaving a room, and you know how cats like to linger by your feet sometime? Actually, all the time. Well, he lingered a little bit too long, and I wasn't aware that he was still there, and turns out the door closed on his tail. And boy, it didn't close that hard either. It just, you know, it started to close on his tail. I don't think in my house, maybe even in my neighborhood, there has been a louder noise made than that. And I'm certain that he never made a louder noise than that in his entire lifetime. And that's not, it peeled the paint. It really did. And needless to say, the situation was corrected quickly. But it's amazing the looks that animals give you. I mean, the look I got from this cat after I accidentally closed the door on his tail is, what in the world were you thinking? My God! And he even made a noise like that. Like, what? If there were words, he was on the verge of speech. He really was. He was going to say something to me, but he just could make this really disgusted sounding meow, and he just walked away in a huff. I didn't see him again for another 10 minutes. It was feeding time, so he had to come back. But, yeah, he was mad. All right, you know, that's the first thing. That set things off. I don't know if it's related to what happened afterwards. You know, when two weird things happen in a single day, I always think there's a relation, but everybody tells me there's no possible way this could be related. But as I'm preparing for the show, literally an hour and a half away from showtime, you know, when you really start to get nervous, he starts making this howling noise. Sometimes cats do that. They howl for no reason. And you never know what's going on in their head. Sometimes they're being playful. Sometimes they're just pretending to be dogs or something. Who knows? So he's doing this howling thing, walking around, hearing howling every now and then. Okay, whatever, cat. You know, are you still mad about the door? I don't know. There's nothing I can do about it. Then he walks up, and literally this is what he walks up to. I have an envelope. For off-the-wall material. It's a manila envelope. It says OTW on it. And I change it every now and then because it gets worn out. It really does. And he walks up to this. It's on the floor. Walks up to it and gets in a crouching position. And I'm like, oh, no, you're not. You're not going to do what I think you're going to do on top of the off-the-wall folder, are you? And yes, he did. Oh, yeah, he did. And I was shocked. I was utterly appalled and shocked. And I didn't have any words to express myself at that point. And at first, of course, I was a bit angry. I said, what in the name of gosh are you doing? Words to that effect. And he just gave me this look of, I don't know how you describe it, just kind of not happy. I'm not happy. He didn't enjoy doing that. And then he went to another part of the house and literally stretched between a chair and a couch and did the same thing. Like, he was trying to be seen as much as possible doing this. And this is either the ultimate in acting out. My cat knows civil disobedience. He actually does know this. I don't know if other cats know this, but if you want him to move and he's in front of you and you're saying, get out of the way, he will collapse and go limp. And you literally have to pick him up to get him out of the way. And he will completely go, he knows the whole procedure as to how to make it as difficult as possible for enforcement to get through. But that's not what he was doing this time. This time there was actually something that was making him very unusual and upset, and making me rather upset as well. So I hopped onto the internet to see just what it is that this kind of thing could mean. And right away I saw that there were danger signs for potential blockage of urinary tract things. So right away, hopped in the car, and believe me, that's not a happy thing to put a cat in the car. And headed to the animal ER. And that, of course, was at 5:30 p.m., so I couldn't make it last week. Had to phone in and say, sorry, guys, for the second time ever. First time was the time I had to go to the ER, when I thought I was having a stroke or something. And this is the second time that I can remember. Yeah, there was another time, too. There was a time where I was stuck in traffic in Brooklyn, but for some reason I don't want to count that. Yeah, so we drove down to the animal emergency room, and that's an interesting place. You see all kinds of sad stories coming in there. Dogs hit by cars, wildlife found on the side of the road, things like that. I learned that they will not accept raccoons, they will not accept bats, they will not accept any fox because of the threat of rabies. But they will accept possums. Apparently possums don't spread rabies, but raccoons do. I thought that was rather interesting. Do you know possums are the only marsupial in North America? And they have a pouch, like just like kangaroos do? And someone told me they have 13 nipples. Yeah, I learned a lot about possums for some reason. So anyway, we were down there and got the cat x-rayed, got the cat checked out, urinalysis, blood test, all that kind of thing. In and out of there in about 90 minutes max, and I have a copy of the x-ray. I have all kinds of printouts as to the blood work and all kinds of facts and figures and things like that. You know, I'm wondering, why is it, as a human being, I can't get that kind of treatment that quickly, and I can't get access to my records, like I can get access to the cat's records? Why is that? By the way, the cat's fine. Probably just a urinary tract infection. Put him on antibiotics. He's back to his normal self now. And everyone's calling about him. The ER called, my local vet called, everyone's calling, wanting to know how the cat is. You know, when I go to the doctor, when I went to the hospital, people weren't calling to ask about me. I mean, some people called to ask about where the check was, and things like that, but, yeah, it's, you know, animal care can be good. Of course, the cat doesn't have insurance. That's something I'd like to speak to Obama about, but, basically, we made it okay. It was just kind of wacky. And when we got back, when we got home later, and after he had gotten over being all upset at having to be taken in the car, because that's another big injustice to a cat. If you take the cat and stuff him into that carrying cage and put him into the car, he's going to be mad for at least an hour or two afterwards. But he gets over it. When we got back and when he had forgiven me and we were friends and all that kind of thing, he walked up to every single spot where he had urinated in the house. And he just looked at it. And then he looked up at me, and the expression in his face was like, dude, I have no words. I can't explain what I did. I don't understand. It wasn't me, all right? I don't know what went through my head. Yeah. It's incredible, the expressions that you can get from animals and the sounds, the language. There is a language there. Of course, I'm always one for trying to save animals and for trying to keep things alive. Like, for instance, you know, I used to, when I was a kid, always crush bugs because that's what kids do. They step on bugs or they throw bugs into spider webs. Actually, maybe I was the only kid that did that, but it was a lot of fun throwing an ant into a spider web and watching all the mayhem that happened afterwards, you know, letting nature take its course. But after a while, you know, you sort of realize that life is pretty precious, and even if it's kind of annoying life, up to a degree, it should be preserved. Now, when your house gets infested by all kinds of pests, then you say, okay, enough already. I'm not going to be, you know, Marlon Perkins or whoever is protecting the wildlife this week. But if it's not annoying you, why not let it live? Why not let it flourish? For instance, spiders. People always freak out about spiders. I happen to like spiders. For one thing, spiders keep all the bugs out of your house. Yeah, that's a fact. They tend to catch them and make their lives miserable so that you have less bugs if you have spiders. Of course, spiders are something that some people just cannot tolerate. Caterpillars, that's another thing. Not really fond of caterpillars myself, but they do turn into butterflies, and that's kind of cool to watch. The other day, I was in Brooklyn, driving the smart car in Brooklyn, and I looked, as I was driving, to my side view mirror, and I saw what appeared to be an insect, a fly, that was keeping up with my car. I was doing about 30 miles an hour going down a road, and there's this fly next to my window, flying next to me. And I thought, that's pretty weird. How can a fly possibly do that, and why would a fly want to do that? So I kept looking, and then I, you know, pinched myself to make sure this wasn't one of those dreams, and came to a stoplight, and looked closer. It turned out it wasn't a fly. It was a spider, and the spider had been attached to the side view mirror by a piece of his web, and he was actually hanging on for dear life while we were flying down the road, and that web was holding him to the mirror. It was incredible. And when we stopped, he used that opportunity to quickly climb forward as fast as he could to get back onto the mirror, which is apparently where he came from in the first place. And he got there just in time for the light to turn green. I started going again. And then I saw him holding on with his eight legs to the mirror. I don't know what he thought was going on. This was the windstorm from hell, but he was determined to hang on to my car. And the thing is, this spider, I know, came from Long Island. I was in New York City, but out here on Long Island, especially if you park your car under the trees, you basically have a lot of spiders that live in the region and that actually live in your car. They do live inside your car. They crawl around the crevices. And when you drive into the city or some other state or any place, really, they go with you. And you'll see them. They're kind of translucent looking. And if you have a passenger with you, they're usually freaked out. Oh, my God, a spider in your car. Yeah, you know what? This is his house. You got to deal with it. And it's kind of cool to think that the spider goes with you all the way into Manhattan and comes all the way back out onto Long Island. And that's cool with him. Well, in this particular case, it probably wasn't so cool with him because he got a lot more than he bargained for, and he was basically just clinging on to the mirror. And I was amazed at how he was able to do this. And I was also determined to make it all the way back home so that he could have a good night's sleep once I finally parked the car. But then I hit the Long Island Expressway. And then, actually, I didn't hit the Long Island Expressway until all the way over by exit 53. I took the Sagdico Parkway up. And it was right about that point, as I was heading north on the Sagdico, that something didn't seem right. He was bouncing a little bit too much. He wasn't holding as firmly as he had been holding in Brooklyn, Queens, and Nassau. And I was saying to him, come on, dude, just hang on a little longer. We're almost there. And it was getting kind of cold. It was in the 40s or 50s at this point. But I was trying to take the turns, you know, not too sharply. I didn't want to knock him off balance. Trying to make it as easy as possible, trying to avoid the bumps. But I noticed he was bouncing around like he wasn't holding on. And then almost as soon as I turned onto the Long Island Expressway, I started heading east. So when I looked one more time out the window, and there was no spider there. And of course, I pulled over immediately and searched the car, looked around, looked under, looked over. He was nowhere to be found. And I've talked to a number of people about this, and the theory seems to be, at this point, and this is pending further evidence coming in, that he had probably already died somewhere on the Southern Parkway. So that when I was driving up the Sagdicos, and I saw him bouncing up and down. He was already gone at that point. There was nothing that could have been done. And I know people tell me this to try and make me feel better, to try and comfort me, but I like to think that those last hours of traveling breakneck speed in that spider's life were somewhat pleasant. The point is, I wanted him to survive. Yeah, he was a bug, not an insect, a bug. And it's just cool to think that all these forms of life are out there. Doing various... I saw a wild turkey the other day. That was pretty cool. Yeah, right out here in Suffolk County, a wild turkey just running around. Counting the days to November. Yeah, so there's wildlife all kinds of places if you just look for it. Sometimes they're small, sometimes they're large, but they're always pretty interesting and cool, and usually they don't mean you harm. All right, what's going on in the world? Well, all sorts of things, as always, are happening. Let's see, we have all kinds of, well, I guess political things to get into. More involving the whole fight for health insurance and Obama and things like that, and what the right wing is up to these days. And also, oh, yeah, right, this is going to happen, isn't it?
It's time. There's something very important about America and Americans that we should never forget. Whenever disaster strikes, wherever hardships threaten, Americans put aside any differences and go rushing to the assistance of those most in need. While terrorist mobs were torching U.S. embassies, American food flights were saving starving children. Within hours after an earthquake devastated Soviet Armenia, Red Cross relief workers braved 12-hour flights in unheated airplanes because that was the only way they could get there. Over and over again, the record shows that when natural or man-made catastrophes strike, Americans reach out to help each other, all across America and around the world. And that's why the American Red Cross is there, to express in deeds the compassion that Americans instinctively feel. For more than 100 years, those left homeless and hungry by tornadoes and floods, and then forced into an uncertain freezing night, have had their faith restored by the American Red Cross. Now, the Red Cross needs an infusion of that great American spirit of caring and helping. When nature's blind fury blew apart the Southeast with Hurricane Hugo and laid waste to Northern California with one of the century's worst earthquakes, the Red Cross was there with help and comfort, thanks to the generous support of the American people. And because of you, it will be there again when the next big disaster strikes. There is not one American who, if given the chance, would not give a blanket, fill a food basket, or comfort a frightened child with a kind word and a warm smile. And even though we want to reach out, most of us simply can't abandon our own obligations to rush to those in need. But through the Red Cross, we are there with our prayers, our thoughts, and our contributions. Come on, we did it before, and we can do it again. Decade after decade, a sometimes far too cruel world has been shown that Americans not only meet every massive challenge with their compassion, but exceed the need. To everyone who's again answering the call, this is one grateful American who says a heartfelt thanks for reaching out through the American Red Cross, because it's time.
All right, enough. What in God's name was that, you may ask? Well, all right, that is a voice that some of you might recognize. It's not quite what you might recognize, though. And I found this out. Okay, long story here. I found this out. It's actually not that long. When I was a kid, I made all these tapes. I recorded things off the radio, and this was one guy that happened to have a hit back in the mid-70s. Believe it or not, this guy had it. That was not the hit. As you can see, he was referring to Hurricane Hugo, which took place, I think, in the 90s, or late 80s or something like that. But he had a hit back, I think, in 1974, and it was called The Americans. And I'm going to play that now. This is the original. This is what put him on the map. And the thing is, what's interesting, I think in the last piece he called himself an American, but he's actually Canadian. Yeah, Byron McGregor. He was a popular Canadian news anchor and news director. He used to work at CKLW in Windsor, Ontario. I've listened to that station. I've heard that station from New York, actually. And in 1973, he read a newspaper editorial written by Gordon Sinclair, who was another radio person from CFRB in Toronto. Now, he read the commentary on CKLW radio as part of a public affairs program. And because of the huge response, he was asked to record the Americans with America the Beautiful, performed by the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, as the background music. So, let's take a trip down memory lane.
The United States dollar took another pounding on German, French, and British exchanges this morning, hitting the lowest point ever known in West Germany. It has declined there by 41% since 1971, and this Canadian thinks it's time to speak up for the Americans as the most generous and possibly the least appreciated people in all the earth. As long as 60 years ago, when I first started to read newspapers, I read of floods on the Yellow River and the Yangtze. Who rushed in with men and money to help? The Americans did. They have helped control floods on the Nile, the Amazon, the Ganges, and the Niger. Today, the rich bottomland of the Mississippi is underwater, and no foreign land has sent a dollar to help. Germany, Japan, and to a lesser extent, Britain and Italy were lifted out of the debris of war by the Americans, who poured in billions of dollars and forgave other billions in debts. None of those countries is today paying even the interest on its remaining debts to the United States. When the franc was in danger of collapsing in 1956, it was the Americans who propped it up, and their reward was to be insulted and swindled on the streets of Paris. I was there. I saw it. When distant cities are hit by earthquake, it is the United States that hurries in to help. Managua, Nicaragua is one of the most recent examples. So far this spring, 59 American communities have been flattened by tornadoes. Nobody has helped. The Marshall Plan, the Truman Policy, all pumped billions upon billions of dollars into discouraged countries. Now newspapers in those countries are writing about the decadent, warmongering Americans. I'd like to see just one of those countries that is gloating over the erosion of the United States dollar build its own airplanes. Come on, let's hear it. Does any other country in the world have a plane to equal the Boeing Jumbo Jet, the Lockheed TriStar, or the Douglas 10? If so, why don't they fly them? Why do all international lines except Russia fly American planes? Why does no other land on Earth even consider putting a man or woman on the moon? You talk about Japanese technocracy and you get radios. You talk about German technocracy and you get automobiles. You talk about American technocracy and you will find men on the moon, not once, but several times, and safely home again. You talk about scandals and the Americans put theirs right in the store window for everybody to look at. Even the draft dodgers are not pursued and hounded. They are here on our streets, most of them, unless they are breaking Canadian laws, are getting American dollars from Ma and Pa at home to spend here. When the Americans get out of this bind, as they will, who could blame them if they said, the hell with the rest of the world? Let someone else buy the foreign bonds. Let someone else build or repair foreign dams or design foreign buildings that won't shake apart in earthquakes. When the railways of France, Germany, and India were breaking down through age, it was the Americans who rebuilt them. When the Pennsylvania Railroad and the New York Central went broke, nobody loaned them an old caboose. Both are still broke. I can name you 5,000 times when the Americans raced to the help of other people in trouble. Can you name me even one time when someone else raced to the Americans in trouble? I don't think there was outside help even during the San Francisco earthquake. Our neighbors have faced it alone. And I'm one Canadian who's damned tired of hearing them kicked around. They will come out of this thing with their flag high. And when they do, they are entitled to thumb their nose at the lands that are gloating over their present troubles. I hope Canada is not one of these, but there are many smug, self-righteous Canadians. And finally, the American Red Cross was told at its 48th annual meeting in New Orleans that it was broke. This year's disasters have taken it all. And nobody, but nobody, has helped.
Wow, the world sucks. I mean, I had no idea people were so nasty to Americans, but wow. I mean, we're always there for everybody, and nobody ever helps us. That's pretty much the theme you get from that. Byron McGregor, Wow. 1973, I guess, is when that came out. That was, it brings back such memories. I remember hearing that when I was in junior high school. And was it junior high school or high school? I don't know. I was in some kind of formal education, and that was one of the hits on the radio. There were all these occasionally weird hits that would show up sometimes. Sometimes there'd be music from string bands, things that sounded like Muzak that would be a hit. Sometimes a song in Spanish. Sometimes something that was classical would be a hit. And this was one of them. Sometimes a Cheech and Chong piece would be a hit. Yes, it's different, isn't it? Okay, I tracked down the original. I couldn't find this on CD or on the internet or anything like that. The original guy who did this, who was Gordon Sinclair, and basically, I've never heard this. I don't even know if this is going to work. But Gordon Sinclair is the guy who inspired this. I don't know why Gordon Sinclair didn't release the record. Brian McGregor released it. It wasn't even his words. Let's see if this works, if this computer can handle this task here. We're listening on the internet to Gordon Sinclair's version, piece of it anyway. And no, we're not. I tried this while I was playing, and it seemed to work. And now it's just saying connecting, and you get that little Mac thing in a circle that's spinning. And having difficulty loading the track, please wait while we attempt to load this. You know, why does this always happen when I do it for real? And when I test it, there's no problem ever. Okay. I'm going to hit it again. I'm going to hit the same button again, see if that works. Because sometimes that happens. You just hit the button twice. There you go.
When someone else raced to the Americans in trouble, I don't think there was outside help even during the San Francisco earthquake. Our neighbors have faced it alone. And I'm one Canadian who is damn tired of hearing them kicked around. They'll come out of this thing with their flag high. And when they do, they're entitled to thumb their noses at the lands that are gloating over their present troubles. I hope Canada is not one of these.
Okay, there you go. That's the original. We tracked it down. Amazing. That was the voice of Gordon Sinclair. Wow. Anyway, Byron McGregor died on January 3rd, 1995. He was only 46. Who knows what else he might have been able to record as far as patriotic things for other countries. All right, speaking of patriotism, I'd like you to hear something. All right, are you ready for this? I want to warn you, this might be a little obnoxious. This might be a little offensive even. So if you're listening hard, or loud rather, listening loud is going to get hard. Might want to adjust your volume just a little bit, okay? I'm just warning you because I care about the listeners. I'm going to play you a sound here. This is a sound that was heard over the weekend. Was it over the weekend? Well, it was very recently. Last few days. This sound was heard in the streets of Pittsburgh. Yes, my friends, wait a minute, why are we playing patriotic music now? This is not the time. You know, maybe it is the time. Because, yeah, okay, this sort of tells you the two different worlds that are out there. One of the music you hear is what some people think the country is all about, and this sound that we're listening to is what the country actually is about. And what you're hearing is the sound of the Pittsburgh police. This is what, let's just turn it down a little bit. Yes, please. Turn it down. No, I meant the music. Yes, turn it all down. All right, that's better. Okay, this sound. Yeah, that sound. It's so annoying. That sound emanated through the streets. I saw a video of this. Well, several videos, in fact. It was really disgusting and shocking. They have this truck. They have this horrible truck that the police use, and it's meant to clear the streets. And if you listen to this, if you go to YouTube and just type Pittsburgh Police and sound or something like that, you'll probably see several videos that feature this. Is it annoying? Is it annoying you? Well, it's supposed to annoy you. It's supposed to get you to run away, in fact. And it's so much louder than what you're hearing now. We have the radio station is automatically kicking in with all kinds of defensive techniques to prevent our signal from causing death. But in real life, you would have no defense against this. Oh, it's awful. My ears hurt from this. I really do. Basically, what they do is they go to where they think protesters are going to be, and they just blast this noise, and it makes your ears bleed. And I'm not kidding. If you're near this thing, your ears will bleed, and it will cause permanent hearing damage. And this is what the police are doing now. It's disgusting. It is absolutely disgusting. It's like declaring war on the public. I want to read you a piece that's appearing on the internet by somebody named Mike Ferner for Op-Ed News. No longer the stuff of disturbing futuristic fantasies. An arsenal of crowd control munitions, including one that reportedly made its debut in the U.S., was deployed with a massive, overpowering police presence in Pittsburgh during last week's G20 protests. And, you know, they weren't even that big, those protests, but yet they really pulled out the heavy armor here. I'm glad that's over, too. Nearly 200 arrests were made, and civil liberties groups charged the many thousands of police, most transported on Port Authority buses displaying Pittsburgh welcomes the world, from as far away as Arizona and Florida. They charged them with overreacting, and they had plenty of weaponry with which to do it. Beanbags, fire from shotguns, tear gas, all kinds of crazy sprays. What is this? Oleoresin capsicum? I don't know what that is. I'm afraid to find out what that is. Flashbang grenades, batons, and according to local news reports, for the first time on the streets of America, the long-range acoustic device, LRAD. Yeah. Mounted in the turret of an armored personnel carrier, I saw the LRAD in action twice in the area of 25th Penn and Liberty Streets of Lawrenceville, an old Pittsburgh neighborhood, blasting a shrill, piercing noise like a high-pitched police siren on steroids. It quickly swept streets and sidewalks of pedestrians, merchants, and journalists and drove residents into their homes, but in neither case were any demonstrators present. The APC, oversized and sinister for a city street, together with lines of police in full riot gear looking like darkly threatening Michelin men, made for a scene out of a movie you didn't want to be in. Incredible. You know, I gotta say, yeah, and with this noise, I gotta say, if this happened in the streets of Europe, I think the people there would know what to do. Try this in Paris. Try this in Madrid. Try this anywhere in Germany. My friends, there is a time and place for lighting police cars ablaze, and this is one of them when they do this to you. Of course, you don't want people to get hurt. You don't want to burn people, but it's time for a reaction. You don't just take this nonsense. This is an assault on everybody's freedom to do something horrible like this. And that's not all they're doing. They're doing so much more than this. And America's corporations are making these devices for them. Raytheon Corporation's active denial system, designed for crowd control and combat zones, uses an energy beam. You know, we won't play it again, all right? Let's not play it again. But imagine not having the choice. Okay, this uses an energy beam to induce an intolerable heating sensation like a hot iron placed on the skin. It's effective beyond the range of small arms in excess of 400 meters. Raytheon officials have been advised they could expand the market by selling a smaller tripod-mounted version for police forces. Then there's the M5 modular crowd control munition with a range of 30 meters, similar in operation to a Claymore mine, but it delivers a strong, non-penetrating blow to the body with multiple submunitions, 600 rubber balls. Then there's what we just heard, the long-range acoustic device, or the Scream. It's a powerful megaphone the size of a satellite dish that can emit sound 50 times greater than the human threshold for pain at close range, causing permanent hearing damage. The LA Times wrote U.S. Marines in Iraq used it in 2004. It can deliver recorded warnings in Arabic and, on command, emit a piercing tone. For most people, even if they plug their ears, a device will produce the equivalent of an instant migraine. You don't just take this, my friends. You don't. You fight back. This is wrong. This is torture. And what is a torture against exactly? Terrorism? Evil people? No, we're talking about demonstrators, people protesting something they don't believe in. And regardless of what you think about what they're talking about, they have that right. And even rioters, you have to wonder, is this an effective technique to use against an angry mob when there are so many other people that will be affected that are completely uninvolved? And sometimes an angry mob needs to express itself, lest things get even worse. Of course, I like to avoid mobs of all sorts, but if anything's going to create an angry mob, it's this. Ugh. Yeah, and it continues. They say this will knock some people on their knees. American Technology Corporation. What a great name. American Technology Corporation. They're based in San Diego. It will knock some people on their knees. Yeah, you know, I'd like to visit American Technology Corporation. Give them a little taste of their own medicine. I think they deserve that. CBS News reported in 2005 that the Israeli army first used the device in the field to break up a protest against Israel's separation wall. Protesters covered their ears and grabbed their heads, overcome by dizziness and nausea, after the vehicle-mounted device began sending out bursts of audible but not loud sound at intervals of about 10 seconds. A military official said the device emits a special frequency that targets the inner ear. You see, to me, that is a declaration of war. That is something that is extremely dangerous. And if something like that enters into your personal space, you are obligated to destroy it somehow. I mean, let's just not let that get away from us. This would never fly in many cities around the world where people have not yet given up their rights. And yeah, you might say, oh, those poor cops, well, they'll be sitting ducks then. You know what? Cops are human beings. It's time we started treating them like human beings. When I see them in riot situations or demonstrations overseas, they're having about the same amount of effectiveness dealing with large numbers of people, but they look a little bit more human. They don't look like creatures from Star Wars, stormtroopers, things like that. You know, they look like human beings. And, you know, you tend to feel a little bit more compassion for human beings than for these evil robots. Not a good road to be walking down. In Non-Lethal Technologies and Overview, Luer and Davison describe a lengthy catalog of new weaponry, including the directed stick radiator, a handheld system based on the same technology as the screen. It fires high-intensity sonic bullets or pulses of sound between 125 and 150 decibels for a second or two. Such a weapon could, when fully developed, have the capacity to knock people off their feet. The Penn State facility is testing a distributed sound and light array debilitator, a.k.a. the puke ray. The colors and rhythm of light are absorbed by the retina and disorient the brain, blinding the victim for several seconds. In conjunction with disturbing sounds, it can make the person stumble or feel nauseated. Foreign Policy in Focus reports that the Department of Homeland Security, with $1 million invested for testing the device, hopes to see it in the hands of thousands of policemen, border agents, and National Guardsmen by 2010. Then there's spider silk, cited in the University of Bradford's Non-Lethal Weapons Research Project as an up-and-comer, a research collaboration between the University of New Hampshire. University of New Hampshire. What in God's name are they doing at universities? Oh, my God. If I ever caught wind that somebody at Stony Brook was doing something like this, I wouldn't say on the air what I was going to do next. Universities are not for creating torture devices. At least they're not supposed to be. Anyway, University of New Hampshire and the U.S. Army Natick Research, Development, and Engineering Center, they're looking into the use of spider silk as a non-lethal entanglement material for disabling people. They've developed a method for producing recombinant spider silk protein using E. coli and are trying to develop methods to produce large quantities of these fibers. New Scientist reports that the inertial capacitive incapacitator developed by the Physical Optics Corporation of Torrance, California, uses a thin film storage device charged during manufacture that only discharges when it strikes the target. It can be incorporated into a ring-shaped aerofoil and fired from a standard grenade launcher at low velocity while still maintaining a flat trajectory for maximum accuracy. We could go on for the whole rest of the hour talking about all the wonderful things they're inventing to incapacitate people. But I think the overall conclusion is that this is pretty sickening. I can't believe we live in a world where this kind of thing is tolerated, or even there was no news coverage of this, hardly anything. So sad. Okay, I'm broken up now. Let's take a break.
As I page through the history books, I can't help but admire and respect the courage of what I believe to be the strongest Americans in the history of the United States. They're not the presidents, lawmakers, investors, or businessmen. They're the Western pioneers. I can't help but think of them when I sit in my warm house eating supermarket food. The young, strong Americans who first settled what was then called the West had the toughest life I've ever dreamed of. And it's with respect that I consider their experience. Many young men with dreams grew tired of city living in the late 17 and early 1800s. And many land brochures made the West sound like a romantic place to be. So they packed up all their belongings, their family, furniture, and food, and took off in covered wagons to explore new territories. At that time, the new land was what we now call Ohio and Indiana. It's hard to picture being totally dependent upon one family and nothing else, but that's the way they were. All by themselves, they would find a piece of land they liked, clear the trees by hand, plow the fields by hand, plant the crops by hand, shoot the food for their table, make the clothes they wore. And it wasn't fun. Disease was rampant. When a mother gave birth, it was the father and the rest of the family who assisted. No sterile delivery rooms of today. There was widespread death, simply because there was no one else around to help. You couldn't just call a doctor. For those first Western Americans, the simple things in life were the most important. Reading around the fire with the family, fixing a house together, planting the crops, eating the food they harvested. And a big treat wasn't a party, it was hosting another family passing through, heading west. A prospective migrant to Illinois warned his family, "What awaits you in this region is a life full of hardships, want, and toil. By this choice, we shall close ourselves off from the rest of the world for many years." But they left anyway, searching something better. Without cars, record players, TVs, or radios, they somehow managed to find happiness. And I can't help but think there's something to be gained from looking at their experience. They were people just like you and me, but they went without everything we have, and they may have been happier. The lesson to be gained is twofold. The simple joys of living may be the best. Material possessions are not always the true test of a man. It may be in the way he lives his life, caring for his family and others. More important, the Western pioneers are an example of the spirit that lives in America today. In 1961, we turned to outer space, and John Glenn made it. Since then, we've put men on the moon. Now we're setting up a space station, and shortly we'll rendezvous with the Soviets in outer space. What a long time it's been since a family traveled west in a covered wagon. But to me, it's important that we remember how they suffered and how they lived so that we appreciate the world as it is today. The Western pioneers were truly courageous. And if they were alive today, they would have been the men in the last Skylab mission.
Sorry, I couldn't resist. Oh, yeah, Byron McGregor, you know, I'm giving him more airplay than he's probably ever had anywhere. And, wow. Okay. Well, we're almost out of time. We don't have a stream up today, I'm sorry. So let's read some letters. Actually, that's a good thing to read some letters. Actually, there's one letter I want to read. Hopefully, we'll have time for more, but we'll see if we can get through this. Dear Emmanuel, I recently discovered Off the Hook and Off the Wall. I've been listening to the podcast for both shows for several weeks now. I keep meaning to listen live and call in, but unfortunately, I don't live in New York City. and I'm not often in a position to listen to the online stream while the show is being broadcast. Well, living in New York City wouldn't help you here, that's for sure. Thank you for making your wonderful shows available as podcasts. It's nice to finally be able to hear a political voice that even remotely resembles my own views, and if it weren't for the magic of the Internet, I'd probably never get a chance to. My only regret is that a shining beacon of sanity, like Off the Wall, only gets an hour of airtime a week for a very small portion of the country, while Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and their ilk get to spread their crap on AM dials all over the country a dozen hours a week. Why can't I have patriotic music underneath me when I'm reading this? Yeah, I know, because I have Byron McGregor's voice on top of it as well, but it would work with this, wouldn't it? All right. Note to self, bring in patriotic music for future. Continuing here, I keep fantasizing about a world where you and any of your liberal contemporaries that I'm unaware of get equal airtime with these boobs, although I'm sure you have better things to do than entertain us all week. A man can dream, though, can't he? Well, I'll tell you what, if we got paid what those fools get paid, if we got paid anything, yeah, then maybe you would hear us more. For some reason, that doesn't happen. I don't know. Anyway, the reason I'm writing is I was born and raised in West Virginia, so your comments regarding the lack of a U.S. distributor for Creation really hit close to home, Creation being the movie that's coming out, the documentary that's too controversial for Americans because, well, most of us don't even believe in evolution. Oh, boy. Controversial, isn't it? Even if the film did find a U.S. distributor, it wouldn't do me much good since I could practically guarantee it wouldn't be shown in any of my local theaters. It might have a chance of being shown at our bi-yearly International Film Festival, one of the few examples of culture in this horrible backwards state. You know, that's not entirely fair. I've been to Wheeling. It's kind of cool. There are nice people there. Well, yeah, they were traveling, too. But, no, there are nice people there as well. Yes, and not until several months after the film was already available on DVD would it be shown in West Virginia, this reader writes. I'd still see it in the theater to support the festival, of course, but the impact wouldn't quite be the same. It just blows my mind that nobody would distribute the movie. I mean, come on, this is America. This is where every screwball, no matter how crazy or on what side of any political, particular political fence they happen to sit, can find an outlet to espouse whatever crackpot theory or opinion he wants. Movies like, for example, Bill Maher's Religious, a film which takes every shot at religion and its adherents it possibly can. It found a distributor. On the opposite side of the fence, Ben Stein's Expelled, a movie which not only served to spread creationism nonsense, but didn't even do a very good job of it, made it into theaters. But this, a simple biopic about a brilliant thinker and scientist, is too controversial? Unbelievable. There's still time, so I'll hold out hope that a U.S. distributor picks it up. Even if I won't personally be able to see it in theaters for months, if at all, it'll restore a little of my faith in this country. If people realize that, yes, no matter how loudly the Bible thumpers shout absurdities about eugenics and Darwin inspiring Hitler, there is a significant portion of the population of this country who aren't babbling idiots, and not just in the metropolitan areas, but here in West Virginia, the northernmost piece of the Deep South you're likely to find. Well, no, actually, there's some parts of Long Island that would qualify for that. I won't say which. I also completely agree with your comments about the disturbing trend towards homogenization that the U.S. is heading towards. I think we're already there. I think we're deep inside that territory. It's depressing to think that one day our country is going to be nothing but McDonald's and Walmarts. Well, you got your Burger Kings and Kmarts. I mean, there is diversity. Let's not be unfair here. Continuing, that's why I always try to support local businesses whenever possible. As much as my state sucks, it is my home, and I take comfort in the fact that there are still wonderful local restaurants, bookstores, hobby stores, and other businesses that you'll only find here. Even if they might be a little more expensive than the big box stores, the extra cost is worth it for what the small businesses offer, something that is uniquely ours, something that makes this particular slice of the continental U.S. my home, and not just another strip of places someone can go to get an awful burger, just like one you can get anywhere else in the U.S., or something cheap and plastic shipped by the millions, direct to every city in the country from China. Of course, you live in New York City, where awesome local businesses must outnumber the ones here 100 to 1. It's just depressing that places like New York and San Francisco and a small handful of other cities are eventually going to be the last places in the country that aren't exactly like every other place here. Middle America sucks. Anyway, this is getting too long. I apologize for the long-windedness of this email. Succinctness isn't forte, but you know what? It's perfect. I think you have hit the nail on the head multiple times, and it deserves to be hit. But even if you just skim through this message, which I did not, I hope it conveys the genuine enthusiasm and fondness I already have for your programs. I listen to you and the rest of the gang at Off the Hook, and it almost feels like listening to a friend. I think a lot of people out there, especially those podcast listeners trapped in Middle America like myself, feel the same way. keep fighting the good fight, Emmanuel, and keep spreading the good word. I'll keep listening and supporting your shows and the stations that host them any way I can. Signed, Duke from St. Albans, West Virginia. Duke, thanks so much for that inspiring letter, and thanks for reminding us that there's always hope in those places where you might jump to the conclusion that there is no hope. That's not true. There are plenty of thinking people everywhere, and sometimes they get disillusioned, thinking that they're alone, that they have to go with the masses. And maybe they're not even masses. Maybe they're just a bunch of loudmouths. Who's to say? Important thing is to keep saying what's on your mind, and you don't have to agree with me to say this. You can say whatever is on your mind. And we welcome your opinions, otw@2600.com. We want to hear from you. And next week, hopefully the stream will be working. Hopefully we'll take some phone calls. And Duke, if you want to support us, of course, we'll be having a fundraiser pretty soon on this station. And boy, if we ever need it. Maybe the stream will work better with a little more cash flowing into this place. All right. Well, you know what? Since I've given him so much airtime as it is, you know, let's just listen to what the guy has to say and remember back fondly when this came out back, I think, in the 70s. Till next week, Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. Again, otw@2600.com is our email address. Have a good night.
The American flag was burned in Tehran again today. In a dozen other places, the stars and stripes were trampled underfoot. What is happening to the greatest nation on earth? Has the moral leader of the West become a weak, pitiful giant? And if it has it happened to the people of this nation? Is it true? Have Americans lost their fight? Why do we allow third-rate dictators around the globe to pick on Americans and go without punishment? And why, after Americans have stood up to support so many others in distress, does it seem that no one wants to stand up for America? The men and women who served in the wars today can't even afford to live decently in retirement. It was American Marshall Plan know-how that saved Western Europe from communist domination. It is in these countries today that American servicemen can barely make ends meet because their dollars are worth so little. America has never turned away refugees seeking freedom and security. Yet, when America looks around for help, grinning oil sheiks say only, pay more. Even the Soviet Union, boasting, we will bury you, is allowed to buy American wheat because its crops have failed. When Americans were begged over and over to save someone in some distant place from disaster, you never asked, what are their politics? How can they repay our help? Americans only wanted to know how much is needed, and can we send it faster? We see Americans pleading with Cambodians to allow us to save their own people. The Reds worry about political implications. Americans worry about dying children. The boat people, the Vietnam War orphans, Cubans fleeing Castro's dictatorship, Hungarians escaping Soviet tanks, the millions uprooted by the Holocaust. These and countless others have always found a safe haven in the U.S. of A. America has drawn its strength from the influx of new blood, but there is growing evidence that this strength is dwindling. Could your critics and enemies be taking heart from what they see here? What do petroleum potentates think when they see Americans drawing guns on each other to be first in line for gasoline? What do the Kremlin leaders think when they see American judges allowing pornographers to flourish while telling school children they can't say a silent prayer before class? What do even your friends think when they see Americans waving communist banners and donning armbands to march in the uniform of this nation's enemies? If some radicals think they can burn your flag and kill your diplomats and get away with it, maybe part of the reason is what they believe you have shown them. They are wrong. The penny anti-Hitler impersonators, the arrogant petrodollar potentates, the tyrannical Ayatollahs don't believe that you can stand up, America. They don't think Americans have the fortitude to tell them, keep your lies, stop your ultimatums, and to hell with your oil. They don't believe the spoiled, luxury-loving Americans can endure the hardship they threaten. They figure America has exchanged its principles for their petroleum. They see American compassion as weakness and American restraint as fear. Are they right, or are you willing to stand up, America? Are you willing to stand up and say, we've had it with those who accept our food, our technical help, our money, and then repay kindness with insult, injury, and intimidation? Are you ready to let them know enough is enough? We are fed up? Then stand proud and say, now we are determined. Now we are united. We are Americans. Are you ready to tell the world, if they aren't willing to prove they're your friend, then they'll have to accept the consequences? You've done it before, and you can do it again. It's time for Americans to stand up. Stand up for what America stands for.